Chapter 57. Stood within a few steps of the hotel archway, and saying nothing to Mrs. Goodman, she quietly cloaked herself, and went out towards it, apparently with the view of disposing of a portion of a dull, dispiriting evening. The church was open, and on entering she found that it was only lighted by 7 candles burning before the altar of a chapel on the south side, the mass of the building being in deep shade. Motionless outlines, which resolved themselves into the forms of kneeling women, were darkly visible among the chairs, and in the triforium above the arcades there was one hitherto unnoticed radiance, dim as that of a glowworm in the grass. It was seemingly the effect of a solitary tallow candle behind the masonry. A priest came in, unlocked the door of a confessional with a click which sounded in the silence, and entered it. A woman followed, disappeared within the curtain of the same, emerging again in about 5 minutes, followed by the priest, who locked up his door with another loud click, like a tradesman full of business, and came down the aisle to go out. In the lobby he spoke to another woman, who replied, "Ah, ah, Monsieur Lab." Two women having spoken to him, there could be no harm in a third doing likewise. "Monsieur Lab," said Paula in French, "could you indicate to me the stairs of the triforium?" And she signified a reason for wishing to know by pointing to the glimmering light above. "Ah, he is a friend of yours, the Englishman?" Pleasantly said the priest, recognizing her nationality, and taking her to a little door he conducted her up a stone staircase, at the top of which he showed her the long blind story over the aisle arches which led round to where the light was. Cautioning her not to stumble over the uneven floor, he left her and descended. His words had signified that Somerset was here. It was a gloomy place enough that she found herself in, but the 7 candles below on the opposite altar, and a faint skylight from the clerestory, lent enough rays to guide her. Paula walked on to the bend of the apse. Here were a few chairs, and the origin of the light. This was a candle stuck at the end of a sharpened stick, the latter entering a joint in the stones. A young man was sketching by the glimmer. But there was no need for the blush which had prepared itself beforehand. The young man was Mr. Cockton, Somerset's youngest draftsman. Paula could have cried aloud with disappointment. Cockton recognized Miss Power, and appearing much surprised, rose from his seat with a bow, and said hastily, "Mr. Somerset left today." "I did not ask for him," said Paula. "No, Miss Power. But I thought you know, of course, that he has been my architect. Well, it happens that I should like to see him, if he can call on me." "Which way did he go?" "He's gone to Etretat." "What for?" "There are no abbeys to sketch at Etretat." Cockton looked at the point of his pencil, and with a hesitating motion of his lip answered, "Mr. Somerset said he was tired."
"Of what?"
"He said he was sick, and tired of holy places, and would go to some wicked spot or other, to get that consolation which holiness could not give. But he only said it casually to Knowles, and perhaps he did not mean it."
"Knowles is here too?"
"Yes, Miss Power, and Bowles. Mr. Somerset has been kind enough to give us a chance of enlarging our knowledge of French early pointed, and pays half the expenses." Paula said a few other things to the young man, walked slowly round the triforium, as he had come to examine it, and returned down the staircase. On getting back to the hotel she told her aunt, who had just been having a nap, that next day they would go to Etretat for a change.
"Why?
There are no old churches at Etretat."
"No.
But I am sick, and tired of holy places, and want to go to some wicked spot, or other to find that consolation which holiness cannot give."
For shame, Paula. Now I know what it is. You have heard that he's gone there. You needn't try to blind me. Apostrophe, I don't care where he's gone. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Paula petulantly. In a moment, however, she smiled at herself, and added, you must take that for what it is worth. I have made up my mind to let him know from my own lips how the misunderstanding arose. That done, I shall leave him, and probably never see him again. My conscience will be clear. Apostrophe, the next day they took the steamboat down the Yorn, intending to reach Etretat by way of Havre. Just as they were moving off, an elderly gentleman under a large white sunshade, and carrying his hat in his hand, was seen leisurely walking down the wharf at some distance, but obviously making for the boat. A gentleman. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said the mate. Who is he? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said the captain. An English, apostrophe, said Clementine. Nobody knew more, but as leisure was the order of the day, the engines were stopped, on the chance of his being a passenger, and all eyes were bent upon him in conjecture. He disappeared and reappeared from behind a pile of merchandise, and approached the boat at an easy pace, whereupon the gangway was replaced, and he came on board, removing his hat to Paula, quietly thanking the captain for stopping, and saying to Mrs. Goodman, I am nicely in time. Apostrophe, apostrophe, it was Mr. Somerset the elder, who by degrees informed our travelers, as sitting on their camp stools they advanced between the green banks beordered by elms, that he was going to Etretat, that the young man he had spoken of yesterday had gone to that romantic watering place instead of studying art at Keene, and that he was going to join him there. Paula preserved an entire silence as to her own intentions, partly from natural reticence, and partly, as it appeared, from the difficulty of explaining a complication which was not very clear to herself. At Havre they parted from Mr. Somerset, and did not see him again till they were driving over the hills towards Etretat in a carriage and four, when the white umbrella became visible far ahead among the outside passengers of the coach to the same place. In a short time they had passed, and cut in before this vehicle, but soon became aware that their carriage, like the coach, was one of a straggling procession of conveyances, some mile and a half in length, all bound for the village between the cliffs. In descending the long hill shaded by lime trees which sheltered their place of destination, this procession closed up, and they perceived that all the visitors and native population had turned out to welcome them, the daily arrival of new sojourners at this hour being the chief excitement of Etretat. The coach which had preceded them all the way, at more or less remoteness, was now quite close, and in passing along the village street they saw Mr. Somerset wave his hand to somebody in the crowd below. A felt hat was waved in the air in response, the coach swept into the inn yard, followed by the idlers, and all disappeared. Paula's face was crimson as their own carriage swept round in the opposite direction to the rival inn. Once in her room she breathed like a person who had finished a long chase. They did not go down before dinner, but when it was almost dark Paula begged her aunt to wrap herself up and come with her to the shore hard by. The beach was deserted, everybody being at the casino. The gate stood invitingly open, and they went in. Here the brilliantly lit terrace was crowded with promenaders, and outside the yellow palings, surmounted by its row of lamps, rose the voice of the invisible sea. Groups of people were sitting under the veranda, the women mostly in wraps, for the air was growing chilly. Through the windows at their back an animated scene disclosed itself in the shape of a room full of waltzers, the strains of the band striving in the ear for mastery over the sounds of the sea. The dancers came round a couple at a time, and were individually visible to those people without who chose to look that way, which was what Paula did. Come away, come away. Apostrophe, apostrophe, she suddenly said. It is not right for us to be here. apostrophe apostrophe her exclamation at its origin in, what as he had at that moment seen within, the spectacle of Mr. George Somerset whirling round the room with a young lady of uncertain nationality but pleasing figure. Paula was not accustomed to show the white feather too clearly, but she soon had passed out through those yellow gates and retreated, till the mixed music of sea and band had resolved into that of the sea alone. Well, apostrophe apostrophe said her aunt, half in soliloquy, do you know who I saw dancing there, Paula? Our Mr. Somerset, if I don't make a great mistake. Apostrophe apostrophe, it was likely enough that you did, apostrophe sedately replied her niece. He left Keene with the intention of seeking distractions of a lighter kind than those furnished by art, and he has merely succeeded in finding them. But he has made my duty rather a difficult one. Still, it was my duty, for I very greatly wronged him. Perhaps, however, I have done enough for honor's sake. I would have humiliated myself by an apology if I had found him in any other situation. But, of course, one can't be expected to take much trouble when he is seen going on like that. Apostrophe apostrophe, the coolness with which she began her remarks had developed into something like warmth as she concluded. He is only dancing with a lady he probably knows very well. Apostrophe apostrophe, he doesn't know her. The idea of his dancing with a woman of that description. We will go away tomorrow. This place has been greatly overpraised. Apostrophe apostrophe, the place is well enough, as far as I can see. Apostrophe apostrophe, he is carrying out his program to the letter. He plunges into excitement in the most reckless manner, and I tremble for the consequences. I can do no more. I have humiliated myself into following him, believing that in giving too ready credence to appearances I had been narrow and inhuman, and had caused him much misery. But he does not mind, and he has no misery. He seems just as well as ever. How much this finding him has cost me. After all, I did not deceive him. He must have acquired a natural aversion for me. I have allowed myself to be interested in a man of very common qualities, and am now bitterly alive to the shame of having sought him out. I heartily detest him. I will go back and, you are right, I had no business to come. His light conduct has rendered him uninteresting to me. Apostrophe apostrophe, 3. When she rose the next morning the bell was clanging for the second breakfast, and people were pouring in from the beach in every variety of attire. Paula, whom a restless night had left with a headache, which, however, she said nothing about, was reluctant to emerge from the seclusion of her chamber, till her aunt, discovering what was the matter with her, suggested that a few minutes in the open air would refresh her, and they went downstairs into the hotel gardens. The clatter of the big breakfast within was audible from this spot, and the noise seemed suddenly to inspirit Paula, who proposed to enter. Her aunt assented. In the veranda under which they passed, was a rustic hat stand in the form of a tree, upon which hats and other body gear hung like bunches of fruit. Paula's eye fell upon a felt hat to which a small block book was attached by a string. She knew that hat and block book well, and turning to Mrs. Goodman said, after all, I don't want the breakfast they are having. Let us order one of our own as usual. And we'll have it here. Apostrophe, she led on to where some little tables were placed under the tall shrubs, followed by her aunt, who was in turn followed by the proprietress of the hotel, that lady having discovered from the French maid that there was good reason for paying these ladies ample personal attention. Is the gentleman to whom that sketchbook belongs staying here? Apostrophe apostrophe, Paula carelessly inquired, as she indicated the object on the hat stand. Ah, no. Apostrophe apostrophe, deplored the proprietress. The hotel was full when Mr. Somerset came. He stays at a cottage beyond the Rue Anisset Bourgeois. He only has his meals here. Apostrophe apostrophe, Paula had taken her seat under the fuchsia trees in such a manner that she could observe all the exits from the salle à manger, But for the present, none of the breakfasters emerged, the only moving objects on the scene being the waitresses who ran hither and thither across the court, the cook's assistants with baskets of long bread, and the laundresses with baskets of sun-bleached linen. Further back towards the inn yard, stablemen were putting in the horses for starting the flys and coaches to Les Ifs, the nearest railway station. Suppose the Somersets should be going off by one of these conveyances, apostrophe said Mrs. Goodman as she sipped her tea. Well, and then they must, apostrophe replied the younger lady with composure. Nevertheless, she looked with some misgiving at the nearest stableman as he led out four white horses, harnessed them, and leisurely brought a brush with which he began blacking their yellow hoofs. All the vehicles were ready at the door by the time breakfast was over, and the inmates soon turned out, some to mount the omnibuses and carriages, some to ramble on the adjacent beach, some to climb the verdant slopes, and some to make for the cliffs that shut in the vale. The fuchsia trees which sheltered Paula's breakfast table from the blaze of the sun also screened it from the eyes of the outpouring company, and she sat on with her aunt in perfect comfort, till among the last of the stream came Somerset and his father. Paula reddened at being so near the former at last. It was with sensible relief that she observed them turn towards the cliffs, and not to the carriages, and thus signify that they were not going off that day. Neither of the two saw the ladies, and when the latter had Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.